Welcome to Songcatcher, right here on Radio Adelaide, on digital, online, and 101.5 FM. I'm Claire, here with Jen, Adrian Clayton, and with Billy on the panel, and what?
Who?
Adrian's looking very quizzically at me.
Well, it didn't sound like it was me.
I kind of ran all the names together, so it's...
All there.
I thought we were all one person now. You that's the way it worked. You know, way, we yeah. come into the studio and we just merge. Yep.
But we have a Songcatcher guest.
Yes, and tonight's Songcatcher guest is about to launch her third album in a few nights' time. So really close. Must be getting a bit nervous about it. But despite this being album number three, I think it's your first time on Songcatcher?
It is, yes.
Well, that can't be right. How did that happen? Or not happen, as the case may be.
You've been slack, Clayton. That's all I can say. So we've got a lot to catch up on. We're going to take the opportunity to talk to our guest about the new album and play some tracks. So,
and our guest is...
A very warm welcome to Jen Barrett.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah. Congratulations on the new album. We understand this one's been a long time coming, so it must be a good feeling to have it all finished and out there for the public.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So I started the process probably about 3 years ago now.
Some people do about three albums in that time.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Although other people take years as well, so, yeah.
How many have you done in the last 3 years, Adrian?
Let's not talk about the last 3 years.
Oh, that's all right. She's been a busy girl.
She has.
So, two albums down. What's changed with this one?
Well, the first album I did back in, I think it was 2006, was an acoustic folk album. And I basically did that on guitar. And then... By 2015, I was still kind of writing in the folk genre, or what I thought was folk genre, but it was starting to evolve a bit more. And then I was working with a guy who was a sonic artist, so he brought in a lot more of an electronic artscape.
So he decorated those songs. A fair bit.
Yeah, he did, and I quite enjoyed it. I really enjoy. How music can evolve. And so with this album, the first two albums were solo, but this one I've joined with some other musicians and with my band, and that has changed a lot of the sound.
and contrary to the claim that was made at the start of the show, that was a 9-year gap to the second album and only a 3-year gap to the third album. So that's actually chuffing right along.
Yeah, and from what I understand, some of the people involved in, like, when you were doing your second album, there was sort of a band feel emerging, and some of those
stayed
on to become the Night Shift.
That's exactly right, yeah. So initially I was just on my piano at home writing.
Was that very comfortable?
That was really comfy, yeah.
On the piano. I think you need a few cushions or something.
Yeah, I did sort of pad things up. yes, and so then I decided I wanted to make the sound bigger, and I wasn't enjoying – I didn't like the idea of myself on stage just behind my piano. So I wanted to get up front. And for the launch, I thought, yeah, let's bring on some other musicians, which was a new process for me at that point.
And I think I detected a change between the first album being acoustic folk on guitar and the second one being on piano as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So initially, you know, I came late to playing music, so I was probably mid-20s, late-20s. And I just basically picked up a guitar and started experimenting. My dad taught me a few chords, and I was just learning more English traditional folk. And from there I was just finding that a little limiting, maybe, creatively limiting, although lovely.
Well, you just had other ideas as well.
I did, yeah. And I just wanted to... Tradition's great, but... I wanted to sort of push the boundaries a little bit more. So Where were we going with that?
Well,
what was the initial question?
Well, the piano was pushing the boundaries away from folk towards something else.
It was, that's right, yeah. So moving on to, I liked the piano because the notes are all there. They're right in front of me. whereas guitar, I felt quite limited. I've never really understood the way a guitar is set out. and also I was finding it, my hands are quite small, and I was finding it quite hard to stretch them. I couldn't do bar chords, so I was really restricted to just, you know, D, C, G, you know, down the end of the fret. But with piano, it was all there, and I felt like I could, my songs could expand.
And then you had a launch, and you had a band supporting you for the launch, and you decided, oh, this is good. I like this idea of a band.
I really loved it, yeah, yeah. It took a while to get there, you know. I was thinking, oh, gosh, you know, lots of rehearsals. Are we going to get there? Is it going to be all right? But as soon as I got on stage, everyone just pulled together. It was at the Promethean, which was a beautiful venue. I think it's maybe closed,
yeah,
or is it getting?
I don't think it's alive anymore, no. Sadly. But it certainly was a beautiful venue.
It was. It was gorgeous. In fact, I think I was one of the last people to play there. Had great sound, and yeah, I got very excited about working with other people.
And so for the third album, you thought, well, it's got to be a band sound.
Oh, absolutely. I probably won't go back to solo now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's been suggested to me in the past, like at uni, so I'm doing a music degree, that maybe, you know, I'm going to get more work if I'm a solo artist. But for me, I think it really does come back to, dare I say, the art of it. And when it's just me and keys, that's all lovely, but I feel a bit almost cramped, you know, like I'm sort of stuck behind the keyboard.
But so for future albums, we can expect more of the Night Shift.
I think so, yeah. We'll see how that goes. I mean, my music tends to evolve, so we'll see where we end up next album.
Yeah, well, speaking of evolving, the lineup of the Night Shift also has evolved since that second album. And in fact, during the making of this album, you've had a few lineup changes because it's taken up.
It's always ongoing when you have a band.
Yeah, so how much did that change the feel of the songs along the way from, you know, sort of bringing in new people to play on the same songs that you thought you'd already recorded?
Yeah, it did change quite a bit. I mean, it changes from when I first write a song and then I bring it to the band. I love when people sort of, other musicians, put their own touch on it. So whoever's playing in my band is going to influence the sound of it. The first lineup, for a couple of years I was in just a trio, so it was myself on keys, and I was desperately trying to find a keyboard player so I could get up front, and it just wasn't happening. And in some ways I'm kind of glad it didn't, because it pushed me to try performing with keys and vocals. I thought maybe I couldn't do it very well. You know, I'm quite happy getting up front and singing, but bring the keys in front of me as well. It's like two things that I've got to multitask with. Yeah.
Okay, well, I think it's time to have a listen to Jen Barrett and The Night Shift. This is from a brand new album. The album's Upon the Hill, and it's going to be launched on this Thursday, I think.
That's right, yes.
So, the first track, The Storm.
Thank you.
Storm, Jen Barrett, and The Night Shift. Jen, tell us a little bit about your band. What's the lineup there?
Oh, well, so I have John Meegan on keys. I met him at the con for my uni degree. And then I have Nigel Walters on bass, Damien Williams on guitar, Craig Fenwick on drums, and I've just brought on a backup singer as well, Sue Oldknow, so it's lovely to have some harmonies with my vocals as well.
So why did you call your band The Name? Is there any story behind it?
Yes, a little bit. So a friend of mine, he made an observation that a lot of my songs shift keys or time signatures. So he's like, what about Jen Barrett and The Shift? Which was nice. I liked that. Yeah. And then another friend also suggested, he was actually just joking around saying The Night Shift. And I liked that even better because it brought in mystery, night, darkness, you know.
Something to do with your rehearsal hours.
That's right, yeah.
pretty sure there used to be a late night show on Radio Adelaide called The Night Shift as well.
Uh-huh.
So it does have a ring that gets a few ears.
Yeah.
So for this album, is there any particular message you want to express in this album?
Maybe not a message as such. Mm-hmm. I think all of the songs express a certain period of growth, and I think all my albums do that. You know, when I was kind of compiling the collection, they were all sort of written around the same time, and they're actually a few years old, really. They're probably about four or five years old, some of the songs. So it's taken me that long to kind of go, right, this needs to come together. The song Upon a Hill is probably one of the newer ones, so that was written maybe 2 years ago. Yeah, and there's a couple more as well. But in terms of theme, I think it's just with Upon a Hill, it's about getting, having a sense of detachment. So going through feelings, but being able to kind of get a bird's eye view from them as well.
Oh, very interesting. I like the theme.
It sounds a bit Buddhist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very not, zen.
Not being attached, yes.
That's right.
Yes, it's a weakness we have sometimes, but at the same time, mm-hmm. emotions and things are important to feel, I think. So
absolutely.
Having both the best of both worlds, I think, is...
That's it. It's like acknowledging there's feelings there. It's really important, but not getting so bogged in them that they rule every decision you make.
Which is pretty important because you have to be able to make common sense of decisions.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like that's why people say when you view things, it's better to be an outsider and then it's easier for you to make a wiser decision.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah,
but it's incredibly difficult to be
an outsider. I know, it's difficult.
It is. I mean, I think that's the discipline, and I think that's the crux of the album, really, because the songs are very emotional, really. I mean, I'm an emotional person, and I think it's been perhaps a spiritual practice for me inadvertently, and it's not consciously I've done that, but I think as I've gotten older and wiser, I've learnt to kind of feel the feelings and not let it take over.
I like that.
So we better hear a little bit, just for a minute or two, about where this album was recorded.
Oh, yes.
And who did the deeds for you and
sure.
why?
Yeah.
Who else was involved? Was anybody harmed in the process?
No one was harmed. It was actually a fairly painless process. Now, initially, we started recording with a guy who has done quite a bit, but his workload was really swamped. So, and I wanted to get going on it, and I could see that it was going to take maybe a couple of years for it to, you know, to get recording and mixing. And he actually said to me, he's like, well, to be honest, when you make an album, it's going to take a while anyway. You're not going to knock it out in 6 months. And it's true. It probably, from the time we moved on to the new producer, probably took another 18 months, I think. So, we ended up going with, met a woman through uni, Emily Bettison, and she has a program called Girls in the Mix. And I actually heard her. I think she might have even heard her here being interviewed. And I just thought it was great because she was really encouraging young women to get into music, particularly into engineering, sound engineering, which, I mean, it is rather male-dominated.
And at least some of those males don't have very good ears from my experience.
Oh, do you think so? I don't know. Anyway, she introduced me to a young girl, Bethan Madison, and she trained at SAE. It was a graduate there.
So, yeah, women doing sound sounds good to me. And I know there's a very strong element around of getting more women making music and actually getting a fairer go of airplay, etc. as well. And well, I think that's important too.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it's actually surprised me. I never really thought of it as an issue. You know, I never really noticed that it was more male dominated. Mm. And then, you know, I was just getting sort of snippets of, as I went through uni, and just sort of information, I kind of looked at it and went, oh yeah, maybe it has been harder. You know, I sort of look back in at history and yeah, so yeah, it kind of surprised me. And then yeah, I thought it'd be great to work with a young girl, and she was great. She really knew her stuff. And you know, me and the guys went in, we did a few tracking sessions, and we'd actually already tracked the songs with my previous band members, and then they had to move into state. Yeah, so I brought in the new guys, and we retracked with Beth, and yeah, it was quite good. Yeah,
we had better move on to another song. Would you like to introduce the next one for us?
What have we got? So the next song is Emerald Medicine.
Turning into autumn, I'll take your burning emerald.
And you're back with Songcatcher here on Radio Adelaide on Digital Online at 101.5 FM, where we are all rich and real. And here on Songcatcher, it's now gone 26 minutes past 9, when we're with our guest, Jen Barrett.
And we were just listening to Emerald Medicine before that break, and I've just got a couple of the lyrics for you. Speaking in whispers, touching in rhyme, the earth it's still breathing, I follow the line down to the ocean where the path lead astray, only to find it's there where you wait, doing your own sweet medicine. And I just want to know, Jen, when the words actually sing themselves, what are you needed for?
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, I tend to write a line, perhaps. Sometimes just something comes into my head. Often I'll be half asleep and I hear a little snippet of a poem. I'll write that down and then I'll bring words forth from there and then put it to music. So I don't often know what I'm writing about when I first start writing a song.
It's coming from the inside and coming out.
Well, perhaps so, yeah.
So you're not driven from the musical structure of the song as being the basis of the song. You start off with an idea in your head.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes it is more lyric based, and other times I might be doodling on the piano, and that's often where the tune comes from. I'll just sort of develop it there. I might go, oh, that's a really nice combination of chords. Or I'll already have lyrics written.
Is that doodling business, is that the way that you taught yourself piano?
I think it was, yeah. Because I was never properly trained. I did have a couple of lessons maybe when I was 6 or 7 and I absolutely hated it. And my parents were like, you'll regret it if you don't do your music lessons. One day you'll be an adult and you'll wish you'd kept up with it. And in a sense, they were right because, you know, here I am doing a music degree and I had to learn theory from scratch. As a mature age student, it was pretty hard. But at the same time, I think not having those theoretical rules in place, I could just go with what I've got a good ear and I know what sounds nice. It just intuitively it all what fits together.
So you could break and make the rules.
Yeah.
According to what the ear was and where the song went as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So you're more like writing the songs based on your feelings rather than according like fitting the rules for the music.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think, it is. It's definitely, I've always felt music as a really intuitive thing for me. It's just a natural thing. Mm-hmm. I grew up, my family's quite musical. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a natural part of who I am. But, you know, having said that, not having that theory was a little bit limiting. And I actually say to my daughter, she's learning piano at the moment, and I can see her doing the same thing as me. She's just getting into her body memory of how to play. And I'm like, just also follow the notes and, yeah.
Not having any tea until you've done your scales.
That's right. Do your scales. Yeah.
So but what made you think like you want to do a music degree?
I wanted to push myself further as a musician. Yeah. I had a business for about 6 years. I had a shop up in Harndorf, a crystal and jewellery shop. And I was, I don't know, the music was in the background still. You know, I was doing the other album, working with the other guys. But I thought, you know what, I want to actually, this is something that I love. And, you know, I have the opportunity to do it. So, yeah, I sold my shop and thought, right, I'm going back to uni.
Wow, it must take a lot of courage to make that decision.
It was hard. It was a big shock because, you know, I'd spent 6 years in a retail business. And then, you know, suddenly I'm back with students half my age and having to use my brain in a new way. But I'm glad I did it.
And we were talking while the last song was playing about you going back to uni, and not only do you learn all this stuff that's very useful to you, but you make amazing contacts from other people that are studying in the class.
Absolutely.
You mentioned Emily Bettison, but
yeah.
I think, you know, we have a lot of people come in to this show talking about doing this study, and they always mention other people in their classes. Now they've collaborated and learnt stuff from those other people as well.
Oh, it was just wonderful to see, like, so many bands formed over the, you know, the couple of years that I was doing it. Yeah, and great there's some great teachers there as well. You know, I learnt a lot.
We had better get on to the next track now. We've got the tidal track next, and it's a relatively new one.
Relatively speaking, so, it's still a couple of years old.
Well, compared to some of the others.
Yes.
What sort of things will we find in this song that might not have been found in earlier songs?
Well, I suppose with this one, we included a bit of a introduction, musical interlude. And it was actually my last drummer, Will Street, who suggested it. And we kind of basically just jammed and let it form. So we added that to it, and it just seemed to sort of flow into the actual song.
This is Upon a Hill.
Thank you.
on a Hill. Jen Barrett and the Night Shift, the title track from the new CD.
Mm.
Now, that was a very interesting track. I noticed we had thunder and lightning, or, well, we think we had lightning. We couldn't really see it. But we did hear thunder in the beginning of that track.
We did.
It was very dramatic.
Yes, yeah. Originally, when we, introduction was a lot longer, and I had a heap of string parts going on there, but it wasn't quite working, and Neverwood Disc Edits, who was mastering, he said, how about we stick a lightning bolt in there, thunderclap? And I'm like, oh, yeah, let's try that. So, yeah.
Full of good ideas,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, we're up to our talk about song, which is, you've chosen Japanese Garden.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any Japanese in the song?
Well, I actually wrote, there's not, no, there's no Japanese language.
And there's no garden either.
It's very English. No, there is a garden. There actually is a garden. I wrote it in the Himeji Japanese garden, yeah, on South Terrace.
Yeah.
I love that place. It's one of my favourite little spots.
So you sit and chill and write.
I do, yeah. I did with this one. I actually had a bit of an idea. It was a bit of a... It's a made-up story, really, a bit of a love drama. So I sort of imagined there were two Japanese lovers, and it was set in ancient times. And one of they loved each other very much, and then one of them got killed by warriors, and the other one was so distraught that they took their own life. But before they did, they vowed to follow the other lover through lifetime after lifetime until they were reunited.
Oh, so they actually could have been Romeo and Juliet.
They could have been, yeah. I mean, I'm a real romantic at heart, so I do like to put that into my songs. Yeah.
You just made me, just remind me of the Chinese love story, which is right. Like in the end, people, they are all like turning into butterfly and live together like forever.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, see, that sort of stuff's great.
So usually your way of working is to find something and write?
Sometimes.
Or just write and then find something we heard before?
Yeah, it really does vary. So sometimes I get a snippet of poem, as I said before. Other times, this particular day, look, actually, for this song, I was having to write a song for uni. It was a project. And I was like, I've got to write a song.
Pressure.
I have to write, yeah. So I went to the Japanese garden, sat there.
Give me inspiration.
And it did.
It has to
really
be about
did.
Adelaide. It has to be about, written somewhere in Adelaide.
Yeah, well, there was no requirement as such, but yeah, I just enjoyed that place anyway.
What do you like about that place?
It's this really small, special, sacred place. And I think there's something about the Japanese culture I really like, I'm really drawn to for some reason. And I don't know a hell of a lot about it, but yeah, I like the neatness, if I could use that word, the organisation of perhaps that culture, and the beauty and the simpleness as well. Yeah, there's something very clean about it, I guess.
And have you tried to fit that neatness and simplicity into the song as a reflection of...
Well,
is that what the song's about?
Funnily enough, I think my music doesn't really feel... I wouldn't say that, no. I think the song's almost quite... it's got edges, I guess. That's one way, visually, that's how I kind of see it. And I think a lot of my songs, I don't see them as particularly tranquil. Mm-hmm. I see them as quite complicated, I guess.
Why is that?
I'm not sure why. I like different directions. I like a song to kind of go, take a different shape.
It's more creative, like, in your songs.
Yeah, perhaps so.
I don't know. If you're going to express between my ears, it's going to come out pretty complicated too, I reckon. And messy.
Okay, should we have a listen to Japanese Garden?
Yes.
Yeah.
Japanese Garden. And Jen, I see what you mean. It's not exactly a tranquil tune, is it?
No, not really.
With the dissonance and the toms,
yeah.
They really work well together.
Yeah, thank you.
But it doesn't speak to me of tranquility.
Not at all, no.
Great song.
I mean, the story is quite, you know, it's dramatic and intense. So it's, yeah, I think it needs that little bit of, yeah.
You're not going to get a tranquility when you have a intense love that goes so badly wrong, I think.
No, that's right.
Can you imagine Shakespeare writing Romeo and Juliet and having it just tranquil and peaceful and relaxing? I don't think so.
No.
Okay, well, we've talked about the writing of your songs and the recording of this new album. But what about, let's talk about the presentation of the songs on stage, because that's pretty important to you. Because visuals, I understand, having seen you perform, is pretty much part of what you're into.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love theatre. I love dance, movement, and I thought, why not incorporate elements of that into what I do? So I don't think I go over the top with it, but I do. You know, with costuming, I tend to, or I have been wearing different head pieces, feathers and the like, and I'll have a new one for the launch on Thursday. Yeah.
But this is part of the reason why you don't particularly want to play piano on stage. It gives you room
Absolutely.
To move around.
Yeah, yeah. It's really important to me to be able to connect with an audience. And when I'm playing behind the keys, I found I couldn't do that as well. But when I'm up front, I guess ideally I'd love to move people. I don't know if that happens or not. But, yeah, I do... I find that I can present the songs better when I'm up front like that.
And you've had this history of learning dance and stuff when you were younger. That feeds into it as well.
And in fact, I'm doing a bit of ballet now. So I did ballet when I was a child, and loved it, just loved it. And then I kind of, you know, I hit the teenage years and I went off it. Wasn't kind of cool enough or something, I don't know. And also my parents were Morris dancers. I don't know if you've heard of Morris dancing before. It's like an English traditional folk.
Big sticks.
Big sticks and bells and hankies.
We have rules about speaking about Morris dancing on this program.
Right. Okay, maybe I'll say no more.
I'm going to say banjo.
banjo. Yeah. So I was brought up around dance, and we used to, you know, I did do it a little bit when I was in my teenage years, and we'd go out and busk in the streets. And I think that sort of laid the foundations for me around costume and performance, and getting over the nerves as well, you know, on the street and carrying on with your bells in your hankies.
And I guess if the music thing drives up, you've got a potential alternate career in making hats and headdresses.
Well, you never know. Although I don't make them myself.
Oh, you don't make them yourself?
No.
You heard it first here on Radio Adelaide.
So do they come from somebody or somewhere?
Well, the first one that I had was made by a woman up in the hills. She's an artist. She doesn't do them anymore. She's concentrating more on her painting. And then the one that I've got for this launch is coming from overseas as well, and I've got another one on its way as well. It's just arrived by another artist overseas. So
do you contract these things, or do you see somebody doing interesting stuff and say, I want one of them?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just kind of went online and went, oh, yeah, I really like that. That could work. So I'll go with that.
So do you usually match that with your songs?
I don't think so. Not specifically. But I think I like the height of the feather. I tend to go with feathers,
yeah.
And the colour as well, and keep my outfit fairly simple. So it sort of becomes about this, you know, it's like this expression up in the head.
Well, there you go. I think.
Don't ask me what it means.
While we're going.
I just like to wear feathers. Okay.
While we're going with expression in the top branches of feathers and things like that, we're going to pretend we're a tree as well.
Yes, we are. Yeah, it's good to make like a tree sometimes.
So, are any of your hats like trees?
No.
Well, we'll have to get a new hat for this song today. I am a tree.
Walk the trees.
Today I Am a Tree. Jen Barrett and The Night Shift. That's a track from a brand new CD, Upon a Hill.
And we've had a question come in about your influences and stuff, but we'll have to leave that until mixtape because Jen is sticking around to play some songs by people who have influenced her over the years. But what we need to talk about, you've got a launch coming up on Thursday.
Right.
So
yes.
We've mentioned it's on Thursday, but you better give us a bit more detail than that.
Sure.
And you've got another gig coming up as well in May.
That's true, yeah. So Thursday night, 7 p.m. at The Mill, which is 154 Angus Street in Adelaide, in the breakout space. And I'm going to be supported by Aries, who does some lovely soulful groovy tunes. And then a month later, on May 18th, so exactly a month later, we'll be releasing the vinyl version of the same album as well. And that's going to be at Nexus Arts Theatre at 8 p.m. And I'll be supported by Georgia Sun.
So tickets for the first one look to be through jenbarrett.com.
Yes, you can go
JenBarrett.com.
Yes, remember the double N in Jen.
That's yep, true, that, yes.
Yep, can trip you up, can trip me up. And tickets for the second one through Try Booking.
That's right.
Trybooking.com.
And in fact, the first one's also through Try Booking, but okay. You can access it through the website.
Okie dokie. So, a couple of gigs coming up. We also would like to flag for you coming up on Thursday and at the same time, but definitely a different place. The Wheatie has Scala with Emma Rowe, Ben Searcy, Jamie Wilson and Emma Grieger.
All who have been Songcatcher guests in the past.
Evidently. And actually, if that comes to shove, the Wheatie on Saturday the 20th has Stuart Day and the OCs. Well, I don't know about the OCs, but we've had Stuart Day on.
Day.
Sunday, April 21st at 4 p.m. at the Wheatie again, Aaron Thomas, Cal Williams Jr. and Emily Davis.
And they've all been Songcatcher guests.
But we haven't had them in stripped back mode.
No.
Thankfully.
But they will be armed only with acoustic guitars, each songwriter walking you through the triumphs and catastrophes that have kept them writing for over the last 20 years.
Well, lots of fun.
So good songwriting stuff happening on this week or Easter weekend.
So sounds wonderful.
Are you getting yourself into a special place ready for this gig, Jen?
She's got a special hat ready.
I've got my special hat, yes. Special place, how do you mean?
Oh, getting ready, preparation mentally.
Psychologically.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll be rehearsing and, yeah, I've definitely been gearing up. I'm really excited to...
Well, all the very best for us.
Thank you.
We'll see you the other side of 10 o'clock. We're taking you out with Arctic Life.